especially as we move towards more like software services and intellectual property being the primary drivers of the economy. His rhetoric around H visas for workers and F visas for students is pretty scary when you consider how badly the economy needs educated workers. Under the last Trump administration, processing times for work permits rose steadily until the pandemic, which it only dropped because there were less applicants, and so they were able to basically get through the backload. In the case of H visas, right, which are for students, educating people here and then kicking them out by not giving them H visas, right? Or sorry, in the case of H visas, which again are for working, educating people here with an F visa and then kicking them out to go benefit another country's economy is a pretty laughable decision that will have massive implications kind of in the long run. And, you know, automation, I don't think, can replace all of these things and these people. So I think in the aggregate, these attacks on kind of public education are going to just hurt the economy and in turn hurt the country.
Yeah. I mean, it seems pretty clear that, like, if you make it harder to keep people who come to this country to learn, to get higher education, to keep them here, so instead we leak those people back to, you know, other countries or the countries they came from, we aren't retaining that workforce. So that's the one end of the immigration spectrum. On the other end, if you are threatening to deport the people who are doing the physical labor of building a lot of the construction projects in this country that you want to have more manufacturing, more construction, mm-hmm. and also the people doing a lot of the agriculture work, you're going to see on both ends of the policies that he's putting in place, you're going to see impacts directly to the economy in this country and to the things that we are able to access as like consumers here as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. The larger picture of what we're seeing here is basically, I think, very clearly a short-term mindset, a very sort of like Q1 profit margin mindset to the detriment of a long-term thinking. To the detriment of, like, even though this administration claims to want to save America and make America great again, there is no clear path from what they are doing now towards what this country will look like 10 years from now, or how this country will be better for working people.
These aren't the decisions that get you to number one in any sort of field, other than, to your point, Q2, like profitability or something like this for billionaires that attended the inauguration with them.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. We'll be back with you next month. Until then, I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ilya Gilland.
Thank you so much and have a great night.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, I looked all around me, but to see nothing but four gray walls staring at me. Deep on
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and we're here with our friends from the Pathfinder Network. How y'all doing?
Pretty good, Adam. Good to be on with you tonight. Excited.
Yes, thank you. Well, let's get into it. Can y'all just tell us a little bit who you are and about yourselves, how you got involved in all this great work that y'all been doing in the community?
Yeah, so I'll kick us off. My name is Vic Trullo Jr., and it's a rather unique story. And I'll have the listeners intrigued listening all night, but just the elevator speech. At 19 years old, I was sentenced to life in prison. To me, at the time, meant the death sentence. I was never supposed to come home. And, you know, fast forward 21 years later, after hard work, a lot of reform, taking advantage of all the opportunities that the prison system had to reform myself, I was granted a recall sentence, and I've been home now for 4 years, and I work at the wonderful Pathfinder Network. Leticia will talk about our agency here shortly, and I'm very fortunate to be a program manager for the Pathfinder Club, which is a program within the Pathfinder Network. And so if you'd like to hear about the club or whatever question you have next, I'd love to talk about that too. But I'm just really honored to say that change can happen, and I'm a living example of it.
Thanks. Always love going after you, Vic. My name is Leticia Longoria Navarro, and I'm the executive director of the Pathfinder Network. And we're an organization that was founded in 1993 to provide opportunities, tools, and skills to individuals and families who've been impacted by the criminal justice system in some way, so that they can, you know, be safe and thrive in our community. And I'm a person with lived experience, having my parents and loved ones impacted by incarceration in the criminal justice system. So, you know, for Vic and I, it's really personal, you know, purpose-driven work. And it's cool to do this work with Vic.
Great. Well, and y'all have so many different aspects of what you do, different folks that you're helping to serve in the community, and then different projects. What are some, maybe some more recent ones or mainstays of your program?
Our goal really is to meet people right where they are at every point of the criminal justice system. So we have some of our prisons some of our programs in prisons and jails, some in the community, and then some with folks that are reentering and on parole and probation. And Vic can give some examples of the programs that, you know, we work together on, and some of the work that we're doing in our community.
Yeah, you know, I will speak definitely from the fact of me being a program manager for the Pathfinder Club in particular, which is an arts-based club. And we're right here locally at Park Rose High School. And we also have a community club here at our Center for Family Success on Northeast Gleason, 7305 Northeast Gleason. Every other Wednesday, we have a supportive art club. And what the Pathfinder Club is, it's a club that supports youth, teenagers, high school, 8th grade through 12th grade, who have been impacted by the criminal justice system, deportation or detention. And what we believe is that we co-create a community where youth feel that they're not alone, where they have the opportunity to self-express, where they could actually see others that are navigating the same effects of the incarcerated system as themselves. And they could be in space. And we do that through meeting once a week for an hour. We believe in the power of breaking bread. We provide like a really good meal. We have these amazing art prompts, writing prompts, and guest speakers that come in that speak to resilience. And the focus of the club is to inspire and to uplift and allow them to self-express. And every year we publish an anthology, and the book is centered around young voices of their wisdom, their experiences, their happiness, their sadness, of just an outlet, just to be able to not have, you know, the shame that is attached to incarceration, you know, the shame of having a family member that's been impacted by the being deportation or detention. And, you know, it's really unique, you know, the power of their voices that are expressed. I'd like to shout out, our 10th anthology is dropping in April. And it's a book, you know, centered around youth throughout the country. We currently have clubs in LaGrange, Georgia, Bronx, New York, 6 clubs in Los Angeles, and 2 here in Portland. And we have the book where the voices are just being heard, you know, being expressed. So it's really neat to be a part of. And I take it personally, as a child who grew up with my father incarcerated, that I'm here to be able to get back into society as a former person serving a life sentence. And I get to facilitate these unique clubs throughout the country.
I was just going to add, I remember when I met you, Vic, and one of the most compelling parts of your story, you know, that stuck out to me is you saying that you yearn to go to prison so that you could be with your dad, right? Because of that disconnection and because of your dad's incarceration. And so I just think about the work, you know, the work that we're doing is about trying to counter that potential pipeline of young people who've been, you know, impacted by parental and familial incarceration, that there be some alternatives for the young people in our community. So you have inspired, you know, what we do in so many ways, and we get to see the impact of it all the time.
I've seen Vic in action is quite the master facilitator, and of course you as well too, Leticia. So can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what that means with the work that you do, because I mean it's part and parcel of what you do, and it's key factor, and but also it's definitely its own unique skill set, and it also varies between the different people who we work with in the community, and in your all's case, then there are specific communities that you're working with, and how that's also different considered to or compared to another project, organization, different population, and all that. So yeah, tell us more about what you do, and where does that come from? How do you become a master facilitator?
Yeah, I would just leverage 100% the lived experience in working for the Pathfinder Network. You know, it is an agency that stands on hiring individuals and believing in second chances, and believing, you know, individuals, you know, deserve the opportunity to change and to thrive, and, you know, be able to come here into society and be able to support others and leverage their lived experience. You know, vast majority, Leticia will know specifically the ratio of our staff here who have lived experience. But I would say, as a staff member with lived experience, is that, you know, I'm entrusted. You know, I'm trained. I go through these wonderful trainings here at the Pathfinder Network that allows me to deliver the material that I deliver. But a lot of it comes just from authenticity, you know, from my heart, you know, going into those rooms, going into the clubs. You know, I really see myself as Little Vic, you know, sitting there. And I like to refer to as Little Vic and little Monica's, who was my sister growing up with me, where my father was incarcerated. It was very hard for us. And, you know, being able to offer these art prompts or these writing prompts, you know, and just sit there and just inspire them, you know, just, you know, encouraging them, telling them that I believe in them, telling them that, you know, you do good work, you know, you write good, you know, you're a wonderful writer, you're a wonderful artist, you know, it really brings out the best in them. And I would say that, you know, the civic engagement portion that we've been able to have here in Portland at Park West High School, we've had some wonderful partnerships. In particular, we just did this I hear it's the second largest street mural in the world, for sure the largest in Oregon, on 131st and Prescott. We painted a mural representing bringing community together to reduce gun violence, you know, to end gun violence. And we had a bunch of community members. We partnered with the Portland Bureau of Transportation, City Repair, Historic Park Rose High School, and we invited the community and the club members out there, and we got to paint this huge, beautiful street mural. Just the partnerships and, you know, just being your authentic self and going into club is something that I've been able to leverage, and it's all attributed to the Pathfinder Network giving me a second chance.
And you mentioned how all the clubs have also turned into book projects. So can you talk about the different artistic projects that come out of these? You mentioned this mural. There's the book on the way. How do people find out more about that? And also, of course, how there's an opportunity there, which you provide for anybody, right, who's been impacted by, yeah, the whole list of incarceration, detention, et cetera, to be able to submit pieces of art and writing and poetry in the book. So yeah, what other kind of stuff is on the horizon with that? And how could people plug in?
Yeah. So we have our and everyone's invited here. So we have our 10th anthology book launch getting ready to get kicked off on April 15th. It's on a Tuesday. 5 to 6 p.m. at Park Rose High School, and we're opening it up to the community. And it's a way where we just want to showcase and honor the students, where we're going to have an opportunity where students who are actually published in the book, TPC club members, we like to refer to them as, they're TPC club members. They're going to get up and they're going to share personal stories or artwork or written pieces that they submitted in the book. And they're going to share it with the community. And it's going to be a time for us as well, is to share the work we're doing with the community. you know, we're going to invite the superintendent of Park Rose High School. Shout out to Michael, and shout out to Molly and Kenny, who are the Molly is the principal of Park Rose High School. Kenny Keys is the vice principal of Park Rose High School, and you know, the partnership with them has been amazing for them to allow this this partnership where we're trying to bring community together. But our book is publishing in April, and I'll ask Leticia to give, you know, a background of, you know, how our books are able to be accessed and, you know, the publishing company that the Pathfinder Network has, so she can speak to that.
Yeah, so all of these projects are published through our own press, Out of the Woods Press. And actually the pre-sale link for Home and Away, our 10th anthology, just dropped. So it's available on Amazon, really any place where you go to buy books online. So that's exciting. We hope people check it out and grab a copy of the book. There's over 100 young people who've contributed to this particular anthology that we'll be celebrating and supporting. And, you know, we hope that the anthologies and the stories and the lives that it represents, raise awareness, create support for individuals who are impacted by systems, you know, prevent folks from being a part of systems or drag, you know, deeper into systems, and create meaningful change, because the stories are so powerful. So yeah, it's easy to find out there, Home and Away from Out of the Woods Press.
What gave way to doing all these book projects? I mean, of course you have these like writing workshops, and but was there like a certain moment in time that inspired kind of all this to like kind of come together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, one of the things that happened in the very first club that happened in Venice High School in Los Angeles, California, is the students, you know, showed up to this club and didn't realize that some of their friends were also impacted by incarceration. And so this thing started to happen where people shared experiences, just was really transformative, and stories that people have kept secret forever, like the shame and the stigma that's attached to, you know, being incarcerated or having a loved one incarcerated, you know, it just felt less heavy, and people started telling their stories, and the stories were powerful, you know, from young people who sometimes we don't listen to, right? We don't think they know enough, but the stories were so powerful that, you know, the team felt like we got to do something with these stories. They can help people create greater understanding and compassion and empathy for the experience, and hopefully do something with that knowledge, because there are so many young people who have incarcerated parents, 1 in 14 actually in the United States. 113 million people have ever had a loved one who's been incarcerated. So this isn't, you know, a unique experience. It's experience that we all are impacted, at least at a community level with. So the stories, yeah, we worked hard to make sure that we could get them out, and publishing the first anthology was the way that we did that. And now we're on the 10th. So, you know, I mean, hundreds of young people represented in each of these anthologies, and they can contribute their work or not. And a lot of them do. We also have other people who love what we're doing and say, hey, I want to contribute to the anthology too. So it ends up being this just wonderful combination of folks that we get to curate the work and share it out with the world. So something we're really proud of.
On that note, Leticia, I would like to say is that we get to witness, like us staff members, you know, we get to witness, like, you know, the change. You know, we see a student coming to club, see a club member coming for the very first time, right? And, you know, they're carrying this baggage, this weight on their shoulders of, you know, the parental incarceration. And you actually see throughout their time in club that baggage dropping, you know, it's shedding. You know, we have students now, we're going into our fourth year where they're going to be seniors, and they've been a part of clubs since they were freshmen. You got students now that are, you know, interested in doing film, that are interested in going to college. You see the thriving within their academic grades, you know, increasing. You see the resilience firsthand. You see the friendships being bonded. You see them being able to cope and being able to express themselves. And I really believe in the PATH is what our Pathfinder Club stands for, is paving a trail of hope. And what we do is we pave a trail from hurt and harm to hope and healing. And we get to see that firsthand. Another unique partnership is that, you know, we were fortunate to partner with a local nonprofit here in Portland, Oregon, by the name of Outside the Frame. And again, on the civic engagement portion of our club, where we're connecting youth with opportunities to engage in the community, TPC members got to create their own films and, you know, got to self-express, and they were the writers and directors of their own films. And, you know, if you look on our website, you know, we do have links to those films where the students were able to self-express, you know, through our arts-based program. And yeah, you know, we're also partners with Portland 5, where we're TPC members become youth council members, you know, where they can have their voice uplifted through the arts. We have some really great partnerships out here in Portland, and it's phenomenal. It's happening all over the country. You know, we're doing great work.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about where you're working with youth, as far as what, you know, what particular, you know, programs, or how do youth get involved or plug in to what you're doing? And also, we talked a lot about the book and the writing stuff, and but there, that's maybe like, let's say, what, 1/20th or something of what the organization is doing too. You have so many different, like a whole myriad of projects, and, you know, the drop-in as well. So can you kind of just kind of discuss a few of those things?
Yeah, I mean, one of the programs that we would lift up here on 73rd and Gleason is our Center for Family Success. So we've talked about the impact of families being impacted by incarceration. So here at the center, what we try to do is wrap around individuals and their families. So we have programs, you know, one example is a early childhood home visiting program where we work with parents that are impacted by the system that have kids 0 to 6, and we go in the home and we provide resources and teach skills and help remove barriers and increase access. We have another youth mentoring program called Mentoring Inside Out, which is really for youth 7 to 18 who are impacted by incarceration, to have that mentor to, you know, connect with and have visits with and do group activities and go out in the community and experience new things. And then, you know, parenting classes and resources, family engagement events. So a place that folks can come and access community resources, programming services. And just right down the street, we have another program, the Resilience and Recovery Project, which is a peer support program for folks that are interested in exploring recovery. And so folks can drop in and meet with someone, talk about resources they're interested in, talk about goals they're working towards, or we can just kind of meet them where they're at, help identify resources, give them support that they need. And, you know, folks come and they keep coming back. So our goal really is to just figure out what people need to be successful and help them to get there.
Speaking of pathways to success, there's a lot of barriers to success, and you mentioned a few of those. And I think one thing that is within an always adapting landscape, social landscape, the next couple of years is going to provide its own kind of slew of challenges. And so what are the needs for the folks that you're helping, you know, in general? What are those needs? And also, how are those changing? What are the kind of things that within the kind of line of work that you do, sort of speak, you know, is going to require even more adaptability and also require more more advocacy, basically, for the kind of things that are looking or getting kind of, I'll use the word, maybe almost even erased within kind of the social milieu of social programs and all this money that's been, you know, moving around. I mean, it's nothing new, but then there's like the, you know, the recent challenges of what are the negative prospects, you know, that we're looking out for?
You know, the thing that we hear over and over from the folks that we work with is, you know, just not always having access. You know, folks returning home from prison, there are a whole bunch of needs that folks have and not really knowing where to start. So for us, it's not just needing the tangible things. That's certainly it. Housing, food, transportation, access to just some of the basic things that we need, but also support and a place of feeling welcome and belonging. And sometimes I think our communities just aren't positioned or, you know, are not welcoming folks home from incarceration. So I think as, you know, the challenges for us as programs and providers get more complex, you know, it makes the work harder to really show up for folks. So I think we're trying to figure out, you know, how we stay grounded and mission aligned and continue to center people in their needs. And, you know, in the last few weeks for me, it's just been continuing to tell the stories, the real stories of how people are being impacted, the real needs that people need, because we're listening and we're asking and really providing space for those folks to tell their own stories, you know, through a whole bunch of different, you know, pathways, but both just continuing to show up for people, paying attention, staying connected, understanding and using our voices and our, you know, positions and the chairs that we sit in to continue to raise awareness and advocating for what folks need for sure.
I would say firsthand, you know, as a staff member here at the Pathfinder Network, witnessing it firsthand of, you know, folks releasing youth having parents incarcerated, you know, the common need is, yes, that emotional support. And having the, you know, the vast majority of our staff with that lived experience, you know, that really gives us a place in our community that, you know, we do have, you know, that direct understanding of what it's like to navigate these barriers, you know, with the criminal justice system, with coming into a society where you're, you know, you need that immediate support. And here at the Pathfinder Network, you know, we're able to, you know, provide, you know, basic essential, basic needs, you know, where we're able to take family members shopping to get basic needs, get groceries for their homes, and, you know, being able to purchase a school clothes for students, you know, coats. You know, I've been able to take students to get, you know, warm winter wear because it's cold, and, you know, they weren't able to have families short on funds. They weren't able to have get jackets. So witnessing that firsthand has been really unique for me, and it's been very inspiring. And it's something that I can say the Pathfinder Network does stand on their mission to provide resources to individuals and families, you know, so that they could be successful and thrive, you know. And that's something that I'll definitely echo that I have seen. One of the things I will uplift is that the uniqueness of the Pathfinder Network is that we recently launched our advisory board. Our advisory board includes individuals with that lived experience that are possibly past or current participants within our program, or not a participant within the Pathfinder Network programs, but it's individuals throughout Oregon that who have some type of lived experience. And we have currently 9 members on our advisory board, wherein we're able to come together and, you know, hear their voices, hear their needs, and hear, you know, their wants as far as what's better for the overall community and how can the Pathfinder Network support that. And I'll pass to Leticia on that, see if she wants to uplift our, and I know she's very excited. It was her idea, her initiative to create this advisory board. And I happen to be a staff co-lead on the advisory board. And that's something that's special to me that I've been able to do here at the Pathfinder Network.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I think you did a great job of describing it. I think just going back to what you asked, Adam, is it's really hard to trust for any of us right now, right? What's going to happen and who is there to help and who isn't. So I think, you know, the advisory board is just one example of saying your voice matters. There's a place for it. We're here to support you and celebrate you and amplify what you think is important. And I think things like that build trust, not just for the individuals on the advisory board, but for our agency and the people that make it up and the community that we both are a part of and serve. So, you know, building trust, I think, is really important right now and in the landscape that we're all, you know, working hard to navigate.
Well, we want to make sure people are aware of those resources. And if people are looking for the website, it's thepathfindernetwork.org. Drop-in services for people exploring recovery, et cetera, and all the other amazing things that you do. Any kind of last kind of closing thoughts or any other kind of things that you want to mention as far as things that people should be aware of, looking out for programming or some future programs on the horizon?
I would say just very fortunate, you know, for individuals like yourself, Adam, you know, current partners of ours through Keys Beats Bars, fantastic, amazing program supporting the community. And, you know, with all our countless partners here within the region, up and down the state and throughout the country, it's very personal and meaningful to me to be in the role that I am, you know, as a former person who grew up with a father incarcerated throughout my childhood life, yearning to wanting to go to prison. receiving a life sentence, serving 21 years, and now being here in the community and being a part of the solution. And I'm leveraging my lived experience to support others so that they don't have to endure that prison pipeline. They can be successful and find their true self and their resilience through partnership and support like ours at the Pathfinder Network.
All right, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guests and to Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for post-production.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act.